From iHeart Podcasts, Supreme, The Battle for Roe, tells the story of the unlikely champions behind the landmark case Roe v. Wade. Starring Maya Hawke as 26-year-old lead attorney Sarah Weddington.
We're challenging the Texas abortion laws in federal court.
And Academy Award nominee William H. Macy as Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun.
Time is not the most important factor. Getting it right is.
Listen to the podcast Supreme, The Battle for Roe on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fun is good, which is why when we place bets, Victoria, I will never, ever, ever take the under.
Yeah.
Who roots for no points?
Well, sometimes you're just practical. If you're trying to give the people good bets.
Well, I don't want to be practical. I don't want to be practical.
Hey, because I won my under.
See, you did. So, and I willingly sacrificed.
If we actually had instead of units, no. That would have been good.
I was 2-1 yesterday. I was very excited about that. But we'll talk about that. Coming up at the end of the hour. Right now, it's time for our Wednesday fun with Chip Patterson. And there he is, Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast. Jazzed for college game day with the Blue Devils hosting the Fighting Irish?
Oh, 100%, absolutely. Things. Number one, sometimes you're rooting for defenses, okay? Rooting for an under can also be rooting for defensive excellence. Right. Number two.
I don't do that.
How about Rod doing the one thing he always gets mad at you and others at? He said, use the phrase fourth line center. I didn't think we didn't number the lines. Huh? I thought we didn't number the lines. But if we're talking about Jack Drury as a fourth line center, I don't know.
It's a very good point. I will bring that up the next time I speak to him.
Oh my goodness. and finally, yes, I'm so excited. You know, this is such a huge moment for Duke football, which has already answered the call with that Monday night Labor Day game. Because what was one thing that seemed to be universal for people that were, you know, on the outside? And you know what? I'm going to count myself as this because I echoed this guess. I thought there would be a big Clemson contingent in Wallace Wade Stadium. Mm-hmm. And not only was it just packed to the gills with Duke Blue, but then the energy that the students brought played a real factor in the way that that game sort of spun out near the end. And Duke was able to pour it on late and pull away. You're rushing the field. The scenes that were so highly visible with that standalone Monday night spot, you know, this is yet another opportunity for Mike Elko to really show a university community and a city that has embraced Duke football in a really special way.
And folks at Michigan State, I'm sure, are going to be watching. I don't know when Michigan State plays this weekend, but they'll be watching that game too.
Michigan State plays Iowa. Speaking of unders, if you want to look at under Michigan State and Iowa.
Like 28, under 28 or something, something like that. Chip Patterson of CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast, joining us. Going back to the beginning of the year, my takeaway from that game, and you and I talked about it, was the number one thing that jumped out at me, and I talked to our friend Michael Felder about this as well, was that, holy crap, Duke looks like they really belong on the field. It wasn't that Duke just won a game. Duke's won games like this before. But it's that they looked the part. Now, will they still look the part against an offensive line and a defensive line?
Yeah.
Like Notre Dame. And that, to me, is what Notre Dame's advantage is over just about everybody. Not everybody, but just about everybody, is that they groan on both lines of scrimmage. How does Duke match up?
Duke is going to find itself in a difficult position, specifically when it comes to generating consistency on offense, going up against this Notre Dame defense, which was so wildly impressive against Ohio State. Yep. I mean, there is just skill on skill on skill on skill on that Buckeyes offense. And, I mean, they had them at 10 points going down to the final second. And if they had 11 men on the field, they might have only finished with 10 points.
Degree of difficulty.
This is a hey, Notre Dame's defense is so good. They only need 10 men to be able to stop Marvin Harrison, because don't forget, they had 10 men on the field twice.
Last two plays. But yeah. my bigger problem was not that they had 10 men in the field. And I'm not blaming anybody. It happens sometimes. You hate that it happened there.
Yeah. I mean, blame can be had, but we don't need
But I mean, look, I'm not blaming anybody. Obviously, it's somebody. It's a lot of people's fault.
Right.
But Marcus Freeman coming out and saying, well, we have a system now that will prevent that from happening. What? What did you just say? I'm sorry. It's all, we'll take the zero. It's us. We blew it. I blew it. They blew it. Whatever. But we have a system now?
Jalen Calhoun, Jordan Moore, Jordan Waters are, and I've said this a lot, that the hire of Kevin Johns is one of the best decisions that Mike Elko made. It has helped with Riley Leonard's development, mm-hmm. and it has allowed a lot of these skill players to fit into a system where they can be really dynamic. But that is not Marvin Harrison Jr., Emeka Abuka, and Travion Henderson.
Right.
I think that that's where it's going to be difficult, and you need Riley Leonard, as he has done in like two, maybe even three out of four games. He's got like one holy crap play.
Yeah.
Like obviously the 41, 44-yard run against Clemson is one of them. But that is a reoccurring instance. The problem is it's not exactly something that you can – always game planned for. And so you're happy that you've got a playmaker like Riley Leonard, but I think those kinds of plays are what Duke's going to need to do to move the ball effectively against Notre Dame's defense. Now, on the other side, I do think that Duke's defense is going to make Sam Hartman earn everything mm-hmm. and is going to say, Notre Dame's wide receivers, we're going to make you beat us. And the reason why I know that is because they said the same thing to Clemson. Yep. And that was when Antonio Williams was in the lineup. They played man coverage. They did not sit back. They said, we're going to mix things up with our front because we trust our defensive backs to be able to win those one-on-one battles before we're able to get after the quarterback. And Notre Dame's inability to hit explosive plays, their reluctance to even try to use the play-action pass game against Ohio State was a little head-scratching. But that is something where Duke can really have an edge in this game, is to use that same defensive game plan where you trust your secondary and you mix things up front and you make life hard for Sam Hartman, because Sam Hartman is an excellent quarterback.
With Sotyktu for moderate to severe plaque psoriasis, you could show off your skin again. And you know what that means?
Beach day.
As a TYK2 inhibitor, Sotyktu is the only once-daily pill of its kind for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis. Ask your dermatologist about Sotyktu today and learn more at SoClearlyYou.com. That's SoClearlyYou.com. Sotyktu, deucravacitinib, is a prescription treatment for adults with moderate to severe plaque psoriasis who may benefit from systemic therapy or phototherapy. Don't take if you're allergic to Sotyktu. Serious reactions can occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections, including tuberculosis. Sotyktu can lower your ability to fight infections. Don't start if you have one. Serious infections, cancers including lymphoma, muscle problems, and changes in certain labs have occurred. Tell your doctor if you have a history of these events, or if you have an infection or symptoms like fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, or if you have history of hepatitis B or C, liver or kidney problems, high triglycerides, or had a vaccine or plan to. Sotyktu inhibits TYK2, which is part of the JAK family. People 50 and older with heart disease risk factors who use a JAK inhibitor are at increased risk for certain side effects, sometimes fatal. It's unknown if Sotyktu has the same risks as JAK inhibitors. Call 1-888-SOTYKTU to learn more.
But are you sure he's the best quarterback in this game? We just had a spirited debate on Wednesday's Cover 3 podcast that Riley Leonard versus Sam Hartman, who would you rather, came out with different answers across the board.
Well, I know Tom Fornelli didn't go with Riley Leonard, because Tom Fornelli still doesn't have Riley Leonard even in his honorable mention among quarterbacks, and that's cool. I'm all good with it. To me, Duke can win this game only if they make some big plays in the pass game. That, to me, is the difference for the Blue Devils. They have to be able to get some chunk plays, maybe even chunk plays that are touchdowns. Otherwise, it's just going to be hard for them to run the ball consistently, especially as you get closer to the goal line, and they don't really have the big targets that can help you score through the air when you get down there. Look, I love everything about this team. I think they have a chance to win this game. I believe they know they're going to win this game. That's the way I think that they think. But they have to get some big plays in the passing game in order to do it. That's Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com, Cover 3 podcast. We did this last week, and I'm stealing from our friend. Roddy Jones. Wow, I'm old.
Come on.
We spoke to Roddy on Monday. I'm stealing this from him. After Florida State, give me the next best teams, 3, 4, 5 in the ACC. We did it last week.
Yeah, they're, I mean, what has changed about the way that you see the world in terms of the way these teams stack up against each other? Because guess what? I think I said that it was they were all a tie, right? Clemson, Miami, Duke, North Carolina.
You had Louisville up there too. You had Louisville ahead of Clemson.
No. I've got Louisville decidedly a tier behind.
Oh, okay.
North Carolina and Duke. They have been extremely explosive. Jawaard Jordan's been great. Jack Plummer had a ridiculous game against Boston College. But ultimately, if we're just going to look at this like in a vacuum, we're picking teams, we're throwing them in the middle of random stadium somewhere, I would say Florida State is your one with a bullet. I would say that Clemson, Miami, Duke, North Carolina, I mean, we're talking about the difference of 2.5 to 3.5 points on a neutral field.
Okay.
So, yeah, I look at the world that way, and then you get a step down into Louisville and Syracuse, and then you get a step down into NC State and Pitt, and then things get sad with Wake and Georgia Tech, and then things get really sad with Virginia Tech, Virginia, and Boston College.
Gosh, Virginia Tech, Virginia.
I just went from the dark green to the dark red in my sporting of ACC teams.
Very nice. That's like the KenPom thing. All right, let me ask this, though. Because I was listening to the, I think it was the Upon Further Review, the Monday show you guys do, which, I mean, they're all great. Sunday is a must. Monday is a must. And Bud, I think it was Bud Elliott, said he still views Clemson as a top 15 team. And I'll just say that, to me, that's confirmation, because that's the way I view Clemson, still as a top 15 team. I actually grew a greater appreciation for them after the Florida State loss than I did from their two previous wins, because it was a game they absolutely could have won, and they might have won had the new kicker, even though Dabo has full confidence in Robert Gunn II, the new kicker missed a chippy field goal that would have given them the lead late. So, and then in over...
If Phil Maffa picks up the blitz, it's over. Clemson's driving with a 7-touchdown lead. Florida State hasn't been able to move the ball. How about this? Clemson's defense against a Florida State offense that poured it on LSU in the second half of that season opener, it was 5 consecutive stops in the second half. Mm-hmm. Punt, 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 turnover on downs. Clemson's defense was good enough to set up the rest of the team with a college football playoff and national title contender in their house, and then they literally coughed it up and missed their opportunity. They coughed it up on the fumble. Mm-hmm. They missed their opportunity at the very end of the game, both executing in trying to set up the field goal with the 5.5-minute drive, which, by the way, I called that. I might have said that on Saturday night show, but anybody who I was talking to on Saturday when Clemson got the ball with 7:03 left, I said, Dabo's going to milk every one of these seconds.
Sure.
He is not going to try to punch it in the end zone. He's just going to go out there and just set up the shortest field goal possible. And when you call that quarterback draw, that's exactly what they did. Clemson, when Bud says Clemson is still a top 10, top 15 team, he is literally looking at his power ratings.
Yeah.
And he says, I'm not going to downgrade them because they lost this game, especially in that manner. When you're doing your power ratings, you grade that game as a 0 because it went to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
You grade that game as a, Clemson covered. But went overtime and they did not, as you know.
Look, I still think they're a good team. It's interesting. I was looking at the CBSSports.com website, and the conference rankings still has the ACC 4th. Now, maybe because Virginia Tech, Boston College are all trash. But I don't know, man. I think the top 5 teams in this league are pretty doggone good. And I think Louisville's good. And who knows about Syracuse? But there's a lot of good football teams in this league. That's indicative of the fact that no matter what the ACC does, it's going to take more than just a year to get a reputation back.
A lot of objective metrics point to the ACC being 4th or even 5th. Bill Connolly's SP Plus has them 5th.
Yeah.
Sagarin's
he also has Florida State 9th in the country. And I don't even understand that.
Sagarin's ratings have the ACC down there around 4th or 5th.
It's fine.
The makeup of this conference, if NC State was better, if Pitt was better, if Wake Forest was better, I think we'd be having a different discussion when it comes to the objective metrics. What you are pointing to is something that the ACC did not even have when Clemson was competing for national championships and its reputation was better, which is almost a handful of teams that you can call a top tier, which are all at that like top 25, top 30 level. I think that's a healthier conference because it produces better games coming down the stretch. But the middle to bottom of the conference, I think, is pulling it down.
Bad,
compared to some of the other conferences,
it's bad. But we move the goalposts on these all the time. The Big Ten last year had three really good teams, three great teams. We'll even say three great teams, and the rest of the league was blah. And honestly, I don't see there being that big a difference this year. But it's hard to fight City Hall, and I guess we'll just keep trying to fight City Hall. Real quick, have you seen the story? All I've seen is the aggregated story. I have not read the story in the Post and Courier out of Charleston that Clemson, sooner rather than later, stay very tuned, they are going to announce a departure from the league, likely to be joined by Florida State and North Carolina. Have you seen that story?
I have seen that story. A couple interesting notes that stuck out. Number one, it is written from the South Carolina perspective with additional reporting saying that South Carolina is trying to block Clemson from joining the SEC. That's interesting.
Yeah.
I think that it is the path that was laid out is not all that creative in terms of it. It's not anything that you or I could not guess in terms of what schools would be involved, what conferences would be involved, and what would happen. The sooner rather than later, and this is another detail from the story in the Post and the Courier, is it is unknown now if this belief is about something imminent or posturing for more incentive-based rewards from the ACC. Ship may have sailed on that, but to take the middle of the 2023 season and now announce your intentions to leave the ACC as just me, just being like Chip,
right,
who's in the middle of this, yuck. I mean, come on.
Well, you are 0-2, so.
I mean, like, do I think that three no votes will leave the ACC at some point? Yes.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit around and guess what year it is. I'm just going to know that when the announcement comes, it's going to be a headache
for
like a week and a half. And I would really prefer not to have that headache here in the middle of the season.
Not during the season. Yes. I pointed out, if you have $500 million laying around, you can probably buy your way out of the grant of rights today. But I think that's the starting point. It's $120 million buyout, and then what the media rights are worth wherever you're going, to me, that's going to be the price tag. Are you willing to do that? If you're willing to do that, this is why I've made the joke before. The public investment fund can get anybody out of the ACC. I think they can do that. We already have an agreement with the CW. They're airing LIV golf tournaments. So why not? All right, we're going to close on golf, Chip Patterson. And frankly, I was appalled that CBSSports.com would do a story, an expert pick story on the Ryder Cup, and you were not asked for your opinions. I was appalled. I'm not kidding.
I have decided the wouldn't it be hilarious principle says tie.
I have that. By the way, at plus 1200, I did it on Tuesday.
Just sprinkle that tie because nothing would infuriate everybody who's invested in this more than like Sepp Straka locks in a tie. The United States is carrying a lead and the old Georgia Bulldog brings it home for the Europeans.
Oh, I want Straka to play Brian Harman in singles.
Man, that's so good.
Wouldn't that be awesome? All right, USA is a slight favorite. Should they be?
No.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, the value was to take the Europeans when it was plus 150 like 2 months ago.
Yeah.
Now it's down to, minus 110, plus 120.
Yeah.
Kind of a coin flip, but I think Ty would be the funniest.
Yep.
For sure.
Plus 1,200. I think it's dropped to plus 1,100. Leading scorer for the United States will be who?
Jordan Spieth.
All right. I think it's going to be Xander Schauffele. I think he and Patrick Cantlay are going to play the most matches, at least four. I could see him playing five. Maybe not, but I think they'll definitely play four. For the Europeans.
Hey, Carolina Panthers fans, Chris Lee and Dennis Cox here.
We're excited to offer you all the inside information on your team with the newest member of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, Panthers Playbook.
Twice a week, we'll keep you updated on your Carolina Panthers. We're talking about locker room insight, exclusive interviews, and of course, in-depth looks at all of the Panthers' wins.
Touchdown, Carolina!
Panthers Playbook. Download and subscribe today at WRELSportsFan.com or wherever you discover your favorite podcasts.
Oh, that's got to be John Rahm.
Could be.
Who do you have?
I mean, personally, I think it's going to be Hovland. But because I think Hovland is the best bet to play five matches. He is a machine. He's also playing great golf. But I'm also I'm on team Ludvig Åberg. That dude is awesome. And so, if you're... Luke Donald, you throw him out with Rory?
Rory, yes.
And yeah. You let them cook.
Nothing but squared up club faces and 330-yard drives.
Oh my God.
Yeah, no, that's the game plan. It does not matter what hole it is. It does not matter what the format is.
Yep.
Those two guys are smoking it off the tee. No, I had Rory and Ludvig as my dream Euro pairing. Yep. I think that Brooks and Colin could be a nice pairing.
Brooks and anybody. And shouts to Brooks Koepka for saying, you know what? You guys wanted to be here? Talking to Bryce, play better.
Mm-hmm.
Play better. You had your chance. You didn't play well enough. Dustin Johnson did too. Didn't play well enough in the majors. It was their opportunity to get in. Koepka has a win and a second in the two majors. That's why he's on the team. It was pretty simple, but it's awesome. I cannot wait.
Did you hear his explanation of the way he approaches team play when he was talking with Big Cat and PFT commenter?
No.
He said, I'm pulling driver every time because I don't have to go hit it where it lands.
Oh,
that's
man.
Your problem. That's a you problem, not a me problem.
I am such a Koepka guy now. I used to not be a Koepka guy, but he has grown on me.
He's also grown. Grown into his, like, he's bent a little bit, and the golf world has changed in a lot of different ways. And I think that the honesty that you get from Brooks Koepka, you are excellent, and you are not trying to tell us you're anything other than exactly what you think. And we're cool with that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm rooting for 14-14, and the U.S. retains the cup because that's the way it works. Chip Patterson.
That's what I'm saying. Then the Europeans would be mad because they'd be like, "No, you didn't win it." Then the United States still like sprays the champagne because they retain it.
That's all they got to do. That's what it's about. It's about retaining the cup. Chip, we'll talk to you next week, man.
Sounds good. Y'all be well.
From iHeart Podcasts, Supreme, The Battle for Roe tells the story of the unlikely champions behind the landmark case Roe v. Wade. Starring Maya Hawke as 26-year-old lead attorney Sarah Weddington.
We're challenging the Texas abortion laws in federal court.
And Academy Award nominee William H. Macy as Supreme Court Justice Harry Blackmun.
Time is not the most important factor. Getting it right is.
Listen to the podcast Supreme, The Battle for Roe on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.